Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, we have, he's back, attorney Anthony Bandero with Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com, former police officer as well. So thanks so much for being on the show. We also have Dr. Travis Shates, retired police major from the Tulsa Police Department. So thank you, gentlemen. A shout out to our sponsors. You know, our title sponsor is Gallus at gallus.com. Don't forget that discount code to get 15% off your next order. It's radio15. To type that in at gallus.com. We also have compliant technologies.com, gunlearn.com, mymedicare.live, safeguardrecruiting.com. I'm still going to list them because they're still on the list and I just read them. And then twobells.com. They're both a new online store at leoroundtable.com. A shout out to the guys that are letting us put our content on their outlets. We've got Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at tampafe.com. We have Travis Shades with lawofficer.com and Ray Dietrich with formerlawman.com. And, you know, I've got people saying, hey, tell us how we can watch the show. You know, if it's on podcast, we're going to be on it, but we're certainly on Spotify and Apple iTunes and also on social media, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, True Social. The best way to do it, go to our website at leoroundtable.com. And at the top menu bar, we have a listing of everywhere we're at, dates, times, links, everything to watch our show, whether it's radio, TV, podcast, or social media. So that's the way to do it. Now, let's talk about what we're going to be talking about today. I'm going to whet the appetite here. You know, our first topic, and Anthony's going to be all over this, is titled Backpack Blunder. New York judge allows suspected murder weapon in the Mangione trial, but there was a hiccup with it. We don't want it to happen to other cops. And we're talking about federal versus state as well. It can get a little complicated, but don't worry, guys. We have attorney Anthony Bandero here. This is his wheelhouse. This is where he excels. So I can't wait to cover it and have him explain it to us. And then what else were we talking? We have another very interesting story that's going to be coming up right after that. And it's police officers on duty for the January 6th riot. They're actually suing President Trump, Blanche and Bessent over the $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund that Trump just got established, and they're suing him. We have two officers, but there is a couple flags in the story related to the officers that we're going to go ahead and reveal. We have drone footage shows a bearcat running over and killing an armed suspect as they're taking incoming fire from the sky, and the same dude had already killed a sheriff's detective. No sympathy for him, but it's all on video. Then we got Greensboro police officer justified in a deadly shoot from August of 2025. Mark Furman, the police detective convicted of lying during the O.J. Simpson murder trial, has died. We've got Illinois State Police. They released a video from troopers fatal shooting of a bad guy. And we got an ICE agent. They've charged him with assault charges in Minneapolis. But there may be some truth to that, apparently. And then no charges for Gastonia police officers who shot and killed an armed guy at a convenience store. So, yeah, we've got a lot to talk about as time permits. So let's start off with the first one. We have two sources, Tampa Free Press at tampafe.com and also at rumble.com. And that channel is from the Liberty Daily. Backpack blunder, New York judge allows suspected murder weapon in a Mangione trial. I'm going to drop down. The other title was a little bit more sensational, I think. It said judge in the Mangione trial, it rules that McDonald's backpack search was illegal. So that's kind of, you know, where we're going with this. So the New York judge ruled that while key evidence seized in this trial, which is the United Healthcare CEO assassin trial, dealing with his backpack during his Pennsylvania arrest, it cannot be used at trial. Jurors will still see the suspected murder weapon, though. The ruling came from Judge Gregory Caro. It posted online ahead of a Monday morning hearing. Now, the judge agreed with defense attorneys that the initial search of our bad guy's backpack at the Pennsylvania McDonald's, that it was unconstitutional because the bag had been moved out of the suspect's reach. So out of his arm's reach is what they're saying. And I'm going to go over what's in the article and have Anthony, because there's a lot of information, guys, and we're talking about feds versus state. So he'll explain everything. The judge determined that a subsequent search of the same bag conducted at the police station now that was lawful. And it was during that second search that law enforcement discovered the handgun allegedly used to kill our United Healthcare CEO, Brian Thompson. But it kind of almost implies they missed it on the first search. And I'm kind of wondering whether they did or they just didn't say anything to justify the search warrant. Maybe Anthony can explain that. Judge Carl also ruled to the majority of statements made by our bad guy to the Pennsylvania police that they are admissible. The exception applies to certain remarks regarding the alleged fake identification, which were made after officers read him his Miranda warnings, but it doesn't say that he exercised his right for an attorney. So I have a lot of questions too. The evidentiary ruling, it differs from our bad guy's separate federal case. So this is the evidentiary on the state side, I guess. A different judge is presiding over the federal case and rejected the defense's argument regarding the property search. The federal judge, the federal trial, it will include all evidence from the backpack, everything, which encompasses the alleged murder weapon, the 3D printed silencer, a fraudulent ID used to check into the hostel, the journals that reportedly contain writings that are critical of the health insurance industry. Now, our bad guy, he's 28 years old. He faces both the state and federal charges for the December 4th, 2024 shooting of Thompson. The executive was shot from behind and outside of a Manhattan Hilton hotel while he's walking to an investor conference. Authorities said that the gunman fled the scene on a bicycle. He traveled to Altoona, Pennsylvania, and he was arrested there 5 days later after McDonald's customers and employees recognized him from wanted posters, and they alerted the authorities. Defense attorneys petitioned to suppress the evidence by arguing that the police searched the bag multiple times over an eight-hour period before they secured a search warrant. The defense maintained that because our bad guy was restrained and no longer had control over the bag, the officers were required to obtain a warrant before they even opened it. Prosecutors countered that the motion by arguing that the police department from Altoona, that they acted reasonably under the circumstances when they checked the bag after the arrest or search incident to a lawful arrest. Our bad guy entered a plea of not guilty to all the state charges, all the federal charges. And in New York, he faces the top charge of second degree murder, maximum sentence of life in prison. He's got six weapon charges and one kind of criminal possession of a forged instrument. The judge previously dismissed terrorism related charges that carried a potential life without parole sentence. The state trial is scheduled to start on September the 8th. And in the federal proceeding, the judge Margaret Garnett issued a January 30th order allowing the backpack evidence to stand while also ruling that the death penalty would be taken off the table. So that's what we have. Anthony, can you make sense of this mess for us and just bring it down to the dummies here?
Well, look, I'll tell you that this is a mess. And it's a mess because I think this is a very interesting situation. Because you have these Pennsylvania officers who are, from their perspective, complying with Pennsylvania law, and arguably they are. But then you have this New York judge saying, you know what, if this same search was done by New York officers, it would be unlawful. You see the problem there? The problem is that the way that the system works, at least in New York, is that if you're going to bring in evidence to a New York trial that was found out of state, they don't use those state rules. They use New York rules. Can you see that? It's basically the form. That's what's going on here, Chip. Because in New York, okay, so let's break it down even more fundamentally. Okay, so we have a couple doctrines that are at play here. One is search incident to arrest, and the other one is an inventory. So under search incident to arrest, there's debate on this, but usually the item has to be associated with the person at the time of arrest. And associated means like immediately in their vicinity, right? Like the lunch area, wingspan, whatever you want to call it, right? Well, most courts, not all courts, but most courts have held under the Fourth Amendment that if the item like the backpack, it was in his immediate possession at the time of arrest, then you can search it even though later he's not near it. Okay. Well, that's debatable anyway here because at the time, like from when you read the case, They approached him, they took the backpack, and they actually moved it like 9 feet or so away from him while they're talking to him. And then that's when they did that cursory search, which discovered the magazine, you know, this red book and so forth. Okay. So New York, though, has an extra component anyway for surgeon's arrest. They say not only must the item be in their immediate vicinity, but you also have to have exigency and exigency, like not only does that have to be near them, but it has to be exigent circumstances. Well, Florida, Oklahoma, no state really requires that except New York. So they said because no matter what, there was no exigency to search the bag, it's not going to comply with New York law. The cops, by the way, and this is another teaching point that I say in my classes, the cops, by the way, said, well, there could have been a bomb in there, right? But the court, I think the judge in New York rightfully dismissed that argument because that is a what if, right? I mean, yeah, okay, he's a terrorist suspect at that time, and you know he could be motivated to I guess the blow stuff up. But it's just like it was such a they said like you're searching for this bomb, but yet you're looking in like coin purses. You know what I mean? You're and there's other people around going to the restroom, and you're not clearing out the McDonald's. It's just basically it's insincere, and I agree. Would you see the point there? Like the training point there is cops sometimes say outlandish stuff with a like, well, you know, my training experience says there could be a bomb in there because it's a political motivated attack, but they have no objective evidence to believe that this guy could have a bomb.
No, I get it. So what you're saying is that the only way that they in hindsight, knowing, I mean, look, this is the perfect storm because of the type of crime that we're investigating, the suspect, where he's located and where he's being tried at. So you're saying that when they grab there's no issue with moving the backpack, tactically sound decision to get it away from the bad guy until you do your thing. But at that point, they should have gathered the PC, documented, got a warrant to get into the bag.
No, because here's the problem. So look, yes and no. This is a very complicated case, but the problem is that the first lesson here is that this is not a legit search incident to arrest. It wouldn't be a legit search incident to arrest either under federal law, under Pennsylvania law, or under New York law, because again, New York adds an extra component of exigency. But regardless, the backpack was not near him at the time. So we'll pick it up when we come back, but it's a problem on three levels.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about this for a while. Guys, stick with us. It's only going to get better. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBluck, and I'm your host. We are joined by attorney Anthony Bandiero, and he's from Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com. We also have Dr. Travis Yates, retired major from the Tulsa Police Department. You know, we're talking about our United Healthcare CEO, would-be assassin, and he's going to trial and stuff. And we're talking about some search and seizure issues along with the backpack that they grabbed on him, because he's got a federal trial and a state trial going. And so Anthony Bandiero has been clearing this up because some of the items have been declared inadmissible in court, at least, you know, for the state. And, you know, a lot of things will happen on the break. Travis Yates brought up a case in point about when the cops said that maybe there could have been a bomb in there and the judge didn't buy it. Travis is saying, well, you know what? If they just simply would have said the guy had links to Israel and they were looking for a pager, that might have done the trick. And of course, if you guys are familiar, the people who aren't, Israel, these guys are just brilliant. Hamas had pagers and they were still using these digital pagers so they couldn't get tracked. And they put explosives in these pagers that could be remotely detonated whenever Israel decided to do that. And that's exactly what they did. And they had the pager, I believe it went off first. And when they put it up to their head or their face to read what was being said on it is when they detonated them. If I'm not mistaken,
the guy I wouldn't want to be was the guy a couple of years earlier delivering the pagers when he was obviously captured or whatever they did to him for them to get control of all of those pagers that were being shipped over there. Because, I mean, they intercepted the pagers from the source and installed those in the pagers and then, you know, had it shipped from Amazon all the way over to there to Mazda, you know. And then when the time came, you know, I think it was a Sunday, you know, they were grocery stores, everything else, and they all went off at the same time.
Yeah, so they're missing fingers, digits, all kind, and their facial burns. And then some of these guys got taken out permanently.
You know what? You know what Thomas Massie says: don't cross Israel.
Yeah, no, you're right. So Anthony, all that I'd asked a question about. So these guys simply would have done a search warrant, and you said that not necessarily. So
no, they're not going to get a search warrant. Look, we know this is a high profile case, but you know, and even somebody on your comments said that, you know, in Utah, the 10th Circuit, they need warrants. That is not true. Okay, they may want to get warrants, but you don't need a warrant every time you arrest somebody and take their property and then search it. Right. What you need is a recognized exception. So just to come, so in New York, we know that the search incident to arrest exception ain't going to work here because A, it's not close enough to the suspect at the time of the arrest. And two, you would need exigent circumstances anyway. And the judge rightfully throughout this whole, he could have a bomb argument. And what I teach at Blue to Gold is you don't go to court and search or seize on possibilities. You search or seize on probabilities, which is based on objective facts. Okay. So the next argument that the New York court went through, and by the way, just as a little trivia, the trial courts in New York are called the Supreme Court. You knew that, right, Chip? I think a lot of people do know that. I know Travis knows that.
I didn't know that. I'll be honest. I'm
excited to see you in the court.
Yeah. So a lot of people get confused by that because they'll say, oh, the Supreme Court of New York. Oh, this already went to the Supreme Court. It actually is just a weird colonial thing for them that their trial courts are Supreme Court and their Supreme Court is a court of appeals.
Okay.
It's just kind of interesting, but I digress. So anyway, yeah, it's kind of interesting. So now the next, we don't have search and arrest under the Fourth Amendment or New York case law. Either one is going to fail because it's not close enough. The second thing is inventory. Now, that is what most cops are going to do to a bag that's on scene. You arrest a homeless person, right? And their backpack is 10 feet, 20 feet away, you know, at the McDonald's, and you arrest them for, you know, trespassing and so forth. Are police going to go through that bag before, you know, bring it to the police?
Absolutely.
Of course they are, right?
Yeah.
But they're going to call it, okay, but you can't call it search and arrest. You got to call it inventory. The problem in this case is that the judge did not buy that these Pennsylvania officers are doing a true inventory at the McDonald's because of all this, the bomb business, and they're not doing a complete search. They're not referencing what their policy and practices are. They're essentially doing a protective sweep of the bag. But again, because the judge did not buy the bomb argument and the bag was not close enough to grab a firearm, and there's like 9 cops eventually on scene, you know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. So the New York judge ain't buying, is not buying a safety sweep of the bag. Travis.
I have nothing of substance to say except the fact that the only bomb that was in that McDonald's was on the menu.
And in the bathroom, which usually they are, one comes before the other. So
we're so going to get sued.
Next thing. So
we have an attorney though.
Yeah, look, that's freedom of speech, McDonald's. Okay. I love McDonald's. And so does the president of the United States.
Well, that is true. Okay,
So they lose what? They lose the magazine. They lose some underwear. They lose
suppressor.
They don't lose a suppressor. The suppressor was found at the police station. No. The gun, the suppressor was still on the car.
You know what? Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. But they lost some other documents, right? The fake ID. Well, the fake ID was something else. But anyway, so they they did not lose his manifesto because the cops never opened the manifesto to read it during the safety sweep, which is good. Okay. So then the Pennsylvania cops bring the bag back to the station, and there they do a legit inventory. You know, they catalog things. They have a procedure on it. They tell the court convincingly that they're not going to, you know, put a bag into inventory, you know, into evidence without seeing that there's a dangerous item in there, and so like a bomb. Okay. So that's what comes in. Okay. So luckily, what's interesting though, just like you said, Chip, is that they've actually missed that gun. I mean, maybe maybe the reality is this. Yeah. When you pick up a bag and the guy's a shooter and you pick up a bag, a gun is that distinctive weight, right? I mean, it's distinctive. It, you know, sometimes the bag is unbalanced. You're like, dude, there's a metal object in here. The guy's a shooter. There's probably a bag in here. But again, to remind your listeners, I guess, according to the Supreme Court judge in New York, if they would have found that gun on scene, it would have been out. Now, let's go walk across the street and let's walk into federal court. So as we know, the suspect has federal charges as well. So they looked at this case differently. And what do we have time here? 26 seconds. So basically, the last thing I want to do when we come back, Chip, and we can go on to our next story, is if you don't mind, is look at it through the eyes of the federal court and see why that answer came out differently than the New York Supreme Court judge.
We will do it. Guys, I hope you're enjoying this. I certainly am. Time for our next commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right. It's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain their upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they call their CD3, which stands for Conductor Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's not only helped officers tens of thousands of times, but they've actually had over 250,000 deployments. And guess what? No injuries, no deaths. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove and ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today. Tell them that Chip and Travis sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. You'll be glad that you did. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by attorney Anthony Bandero from BlueTheGold.com and also Dr. Travis H., retired Tulsa police major. We've been talking about the United Healthcare assassin and the issues with evidence going to state and federal trial. Anthony's been breaking this down because there's been a lot of hoopla with what the local cops did when they found this guy and trying to get him into trying to get everything in the court. So, and I told Anthony what my last question to him is going to be, which will be what not necessarily what should have been done, because it's really hard to fault the cops from the information Anthony supplied, but what could have been done to make everybody happy. Just, and look, the importance of the show, we don't want the same thing to happen again. So that's one benefit that we have on the show, especially smaller agencies that are watching it, that we can get this information out to them, because you don't know what you don't know. And I got to admit that even coming into this, I've learned so much from Anthony Bandero. This is his wheelhouse, talking about search and seizure. And at the end, I need you to tell agencies how they can get a hold of you to lower liability for themselves and their officers. But Anthony, the floor is yours.
Our pleasure. I appreciate you. So the last thing is, let's go walk through we went across the street to the federal courthouse. They upheld all of this and didn't have a problem with anything. But I'll tell you, this is my viewpoint. So what they said, what the federal court said, was that this was a legit inventory. And I got to tell you, I'm a little suspect of that. I don't know if that really holds water, because inventories do require what's called good faith, meaning it should be, they do care about why you're doing it. I think it's pretty clear based on what the cops said on scene, also during deposition, during the suppression hearing, not deposition, but suppression hearing. And it's pretty clear the way they acted that this was not a true good faith inventory. They're not looking to inventory items. They are looking for a bomb. They're looking for, whatever. And it's just, they didn't do a complete, they didn't really do an inventory sheet. It's just, it doesn't look or sound like an inventory. However, so I if I was the federal judge, I would not uphold it under that rubric. However, I would have upheld it under a classic protective sweep for weapons, because we absolutely have objective reasons to believe that there's a firearm in that bag. And what I teach my cops, Chip, is that if you're going to transport a bag, and for some reason you're going to do the inventory at the station, which you don't have to do that. You can do the inventory on scene, which most cops do, okay? But regardless, for the weather, it's a lot of stuff. It's an unhoused person with the duffel bag. And you have reason, you have objective reason to believe that there is a weapon and a firearm in there. Would you really want to transport that item in the back of your exploder and have nothing bouncing around and maybe have a trigger that's unguarded and blow a round off? That's my point.
Huh? Yeah. I'm going to make it safe. Yeah.
Correct. So now here's what's funny about it, because either way, we're going to win in federal court, because under inventory, you need what's called good faith. It has to be, you have to be like wanting to do an inventory for a legit purpose. But under a safety sweep, it's a different standard. It's just objective reasonableness. Did these cops have an objective reason to believe that there's a firearm in that bag? Absolutely. All day, twice on Sunday. So, and not only that, Chip, but they actually looked like they did a protective, well, they didn't find the gun, but regardless, just call it a protective sweep, okay?
Yeah.
And now, but still, just, we can end this off. I can go on forever, but still, they, in my view, they could have still done a complete inventory on scene. That's just, but they should have done a legit inventory. So one requires good faith, one doesn't. Okay. Which means they don't care about what the officer motivated. Going back to your question, your last question is, what would I tell my officers if this happened, if we hit the reset button? I would say one of two things. If it's a regular case and you're just using the regular rules, I would do an inventory on scene. Or I would do a protective sweep. Either way, I'm going to get into that bag on scene, you know, just to make sure that there's nothing dangerous and so forth. If this is a high-profile shooter and we know this guy, this is, you know, this is international news, quite frankly, I probably would have got a warrant. Left it at, just stayed at the McDonald's, got a telephonic, and then just at the, that would have been the cleaner way to do it. But most cops are not going to get a warrant for shooting cases, okay? You don't need a warrant. Just do an inventory. No. If it's outside their grasp, do an inventory, do a legit inventory, and call it a day.
I mean, in hindsight, I would have asked for consent in addition to, prior to getting the warrant. I still would have got the warrant.
Correct.
But I would have asked for consent first, gotten it in writing, and then I would have asked for the warrant, and I only would have done it, gone into the bag if I got the warrant. Now,
if you got consent, why are you asking for consent if you need a warrant regardless?
Well, as a backup, just in case the warrant gets thrown out in court for whatever reason, I've got the consent as a backup.
That's Haley's comment, though. I mean, having warrants getting thrown out is one in a, I mean, that's a unicorn. I mean, the consent.
Where I'm from, that's the way we rolled. I mean, it's extra. I realize that, but why not? If you can get it, why not? You know,
Yeah.
And with body cam and stuff, there may not be a need to get it in writing. I will say, and I want to be cautious how I word this, but, and I'm not active anymore, so it may not matter, but there are many times in a law enforcement officer's life, while he's working, to where you may do something that, you know, that if you find something, you're not going to be able to charge the guy with it, but you're still going to do what needs to get done in order to get that weapon or get this or get that, even though you realize that, look, if I get this, I'm not going to be able to criminally charge this guy. It's not going to stand up in court. But
I don't like that the way you said it, but I would say
it doesn't
this.
Sound I'm going to modify it, but it's true. But modify it. Help
no,
me
I know.
Out.
I know it's true. I know there's street laws, and there's, you know, but the way I teach that, because I understand what you're talking about, is that if you have a wobbler, if you're like, look, there's a chance that this gets thrown out, but yet I stay safe. And then as long as you have an argument that you are doing something valid, but if you're like, but some cops, I'll just because the problem, Chip, is that I have some officers out there that were like, I'm doing it. I do a pat down on everybody I get out of the car. I'm like, everybody, even if they're not, you don't consider, yep, because I'm going home at night. I said, you're violating the Constitution. Didn't you take an oath? But if you're like, hey, man, I think I have it. I'm a newer officer. I'm not really good at, you know, I think this person could be armed and dangerous. I would say lean in the side of caution, do the pat down, argue what you think why you had it. And if it gets thrown out, then it is what it is. That to me is a better way. At least it's justifiable, because I don't like the cops that say, I'll just do it because I want to go home at night. Well, you do take a risk being a law enforcement officer by the very nature of the job. You know what I'm saying? Like, if otherwise, just bring up the AR-15 every time you do a traffic stop, you know? Yeah.
I just don't, I mean, and I wasn't talking to the extreme you were talking about, but you, sometimes you're in a position where, you know what, if I look here, if I put my head around there, and if I, you know, I can't maybe necessarily put it with a bad guy, but I'm going to go, and I'm not going to charge. I'm not going to charge somebody with something that won't stand up in court. But there are, I have found hundreds of stacks of of printed Social Security cards that are blank. I mean, there's just been all kinds of stuff that, because of that attitude, I found things and confiscated them, but put them in as found property instead of as, you know, as a charging instrument for a crime. So,
is that how you, is that just out of curiosity, is that how you're getting your 10 Social Security checks per month?
Oh, I wish. All right. Well, Travis, we got little under 3 minutes before we take our third commercial break. Any weigh-ins on this, Travis Shates?
No, I agree with Anthony that these cops did nothing wrong. It was business as usual. It just happened to be one of the most high-profile cases of a generation.
You think?
And in a New York court, and someone that's done expert work in New York, everything's different in New York. Literally, it's really wild when you do work in New York, because you know, a lot of my work is in police driving and police pursuits, and even that is different. And you'd be surprised, it's not different against the police, it's different for the police. And I was involved in a case that was the first time that they were ever successful of getting past immunity in a police pursuit, because the laws are so strong for police, which you wouldn't expect in the state of New York, but it is.
Yeah, this is just one of the most fascinating topics that we've covered in a while, and it doesn't all make sense. I mean, you made sense of it, Anthony, but the fact that we're having the talk about, you know, a lot of the stuff just shouldn't be, you know, it's just the craziest thing. So thank you for making sense out of this. And even though it doesn't still make sense totally, you know what I'm saying? I just can't believe that New York is that whacked out, but yeah, they are.
Mm-hmm. They're upside down. They're literally upside down. The Supreme Court's on the bottom and the
wow. Upside down. All right. Well, perfect story for you, because no one else would have been able to explain it that well. Hey, lastly, you know, if we have people watching the show and saying, man, this guy's really good. How do I, you know, I wish my cops understood stuff like this. I wish he could come and talk to us. How can they, if you're an agency head or your command staff or just an individual officer, how can they get more? And you muted yourself, I think, Anthony, but how can they get more?
So real quick, we're here for the audience, but blue2gold, you see my name, .com. Just go there, and what I do mainly right now, Chip, what I'm doing these days is closed training, meaning agencies bring me in, and I train the entire agency.
Wow.
You know, like right now, I'm in my beautiful home of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. So I'm teaching all of Kootenai County, which is our sheriff's department, and right. So I teach Texas DPS. I teach all of them. I go around the Texas and teach them. So all their little regions. So the point is that's go to blue to gold, but we also have open training, which doesn't cost you a penny.
All right. I love it. BlueTheGold.com, guys, check it out. And we're going for a third commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. But pay attention, because there's some new stuff going on with GunLearn. Now, GunLearn itself, it's the first and it's the only company that offers a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. Now, here's the deal. That certified firearm specialist, now it's worth college credits. They have partnered with Smarter Degree and Smarter Degree's university partners. Even if you got that designation 5 years ago, it's now worth college credits, and that's a pretty good feat. And they've been doing this since 1996. They've been teaching everything that LEOs, which is law enforcement officers, need to know about firearms and also ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. Now, you can start today with online training, or you can sign up to attend a live seminar. And if you have your own agency, if you're a chief or a sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Also, hook up with the founder, Dan O'Kelly. You can do all that at gunlearn.com. You'd be glad that you did. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by attorney Anthony Bandero from bluethegold.com and also Dr. Travis Shates. He's retired police major from the Tulsa Police Department. And wow, it's just been a fascinating show. I've learned so much about our United Healthcare assassin and some of the not really grease, some of the stuff that happened on the search and seizure side of it. And Anthony provided some great insight in the difference between, in this particular case, federal and state law, and what the officers could have done, but not necessarily what they should have done. You know, you don't know what you don't know. And this would have happened to any one of us watching the show. There's no way that almost every cop would have been able to avoid what happened to the guys that got involved in it, and they caught a bona fide bad guy. So I'm glad that it worked out. And of course, if anybody wants more information about how to lower liability for the individual officer or the agency, go to bluethegold.com, hook up with attorney Anthony Bandero. He's already proven that he's worth his weight in gold and then some. This next story, justthenews.com. We have police officers on duty for the January 6th riot. They're actually suing Trump, Blanche, and Bessent over the $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund. So we've got a little over 8 minutes. I want to cover two stories. So on this one, these two cops, they were at the U.S. Capitol January the 6th, 2021. They filed a lawsuit on Wednesday seeking to stop payments from the $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund that Trump had established. Now, President Donald Trump set up the fund to compensate those people who the administration believes received unfair treatment under the Biden Justice Department. There were 1,200 people who were charged in the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol. Charges range from unlawful entry all the way to sedition and assaulting a police officer. Trump has pardoned everyone who had been federally charged. The lawsuit also names Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche and Treasury Secretary Todd Bessen in it. The lawsuit argues, now there's a flag coming up. Let's see if you guys pick up on it. The lawsuit argues that the fund is unconstitutional and illegal. Now, these are two cops that are filing this lawsuit, but they say it's unconstitutional, it's illegal. It also claims that the fund will endanger the lives of the plaintiffs, Harry Dunn and Officer Daniel Hodges, who defended the Capitol during the protest. The fund will, according to their complaint, encourage violence against the officers, these two officers, and it will fund violent actions of rioters, paramilitaries, and their supporters. Now, Hodges, one of the complainants, he is a Metropolitan Police Department officer, so he's a current Metro cop. And Dunn is a former U.S. Capitol Police officer, but guess what he's doing now? He's a Democratic candidate in the House primary for Maryland's 5th Congressional District, according to the Associated Press. So if that gives you any insight on the background of why the motivation for these guys following this lawsuit. Travis, any commentary on this one?
I was just going through the dictionary this morning and looked up the word useful idiot and saw these guys' pictures. American cops from 2020 just called and they don't care what these guys say, because last time I checked, they were battling rioters for a year across this country. And these guys have a bad day and we keep hearing about it. And, you know, everything in politics is through a lens of deception and misperception. This fund isn't necessarily for people that were rioting. This fund is for the hundreds, if not thousands, of people that were targeted by the DOJ during the Biden administration. So it could mean some people there. I mean, there were grandmas there that were targeted and abused. I mean, I actually had a friend that was there. He walked by the Capitol and he saw the doors wide open. And he thought they were given tours. And now we've heard witnesses talk about this, how they were coaxed inside the Capitol. He literally saw the door open. His buddy goes, hey, they're giving tours of the Capitol. You want to go? And something in his mind said, no, let's keep walking to the hotel. He kept walking to the hotel. A few weeks later, FBI's banging on his door. He didn't even go to the Capitol, okay? Because they pulled cell phone data and credit card data from every American in that city at the time. And they started investigating everybody. So it's these individuals that I think that fund is probably designed for. But we can't be honest about anything in politics. We have to make everything about Trump and everything about January 6th, and everyone's losing their minds. So hopefully people can read through this. About half the country can't, but I'm certainly hope that they can actually read and go from there. And by the way, if I hear one more time that cops were killed on January 6th, I'm going to get in my car and drive to their house myself. Because, once again, it's all a lie. No cop was killed on January 6th. The only person killed on January 6th was killed by a cop for trespassing and breaking a window. So that's the truth. And you can read the after-action report from the Washington, D.C. Metro Police on that case to tell you what was going on. They were shocked that it happened. They were standing right next to Ashley Babbitt.
You know, there's only, you know, most cops are conservative. So we found the two cops with these two agencies that were not. So it makes a lot of sense. Now, lastly, we've only got a little over 4 minutes. Rumble.com. This is Butter, our favorite law enforcement video channel. Drone footage shows a bear cat running over and killing an armed suspect who killed a Tulare County Sheriff's Office detective.
Ketchup! One gun shot.
Justin, are you good?
Driver's side, 5 feet,
our
6 feet,
fence?
Our side of the fence, laying down, proned out, just up against the fence.
During this time, the suspect fired additional shots, striking the driver's side and undercarriage of the Bearcat. Here you can see the gunshot to the driver's side window.
So we're in Bakersfield, California right now. The Kern County Sheriff's Office releases body cam footage on Tuesday of this incident that led to the death of the suspect. But don't feel sorry for a bad guy, because he shot and killed a Tulare County Sheriff's Detective Randy Hopper back in April. So law enforcement, they were involved in a standoff with this guy. His last name is Morales, our bad guy, for several hours. The Bearcat used, it was provided by the Kern County Sheriff's Office. So good for them that they've got some of this. I don't know if it was from the military surplus equipment, but thank God they've got it. So they're helping out the other sheriff's office.
At this point, the drone repositions and captures the third and final use of force. Viewer discretion is advised.
And so the Kern County Sheriff's Office is supplying it. Eric Morales, our bad guy, he's 59 years old. He shot at the Bearcat, striking it. And subsequently, the Bearcat runs him over and kills him after he shoots at it. Now, the Kern County Sheriff Deputy Chad Clark is placed on routine critical incident leave. So I suspect that he was the driver that took out the bad guy. And the suspect, David Eric Morales, he shot and killed this detective, Randy Hobart. And the incident stemmed from something happened earlier in the day, back in April the 9th, 2026, 10:20 in the morning. Deputies attempted to serve an eviction notice to the 59-year-old Morales. And the Tulare County Sheriff, Mike Bordeaux, said that he had been notified about a month earlier that he's going to be evicted, that he has to leave. Morales opened fire with a rifle, prompting an officer-involved shooting. Now, look, they had cops from Porterville Police, Visalia, and California Highway Patrol showed up. And during all the chaos going on, Tulare County Detective Randy Hobart ended up being shot. They took him to the hospital. He later died, unfortunately. He leaves behind a wife and a four-month-old baby, if you can believe that. The Kern County Sheriff's Office are investigating the deadly use of force in the incident, and they're going to submit it to Tulare County on May 12th. Kern County Sheriff's Office convened an incident review, and everything was above board. Use of force was justified. Anthony Bandero, we have drone footage of this. What do you think?
Well, just real quick, I thought it was a great job. I mean, this guy's obviously a clear and present danger. I've never seen anything. I've seen something similar with like running over people with like the Crown Vic and stuff and blowing to pieces. I did talk to the officer involved in this, the driver. He says, yeah, so when I was involved in this OIS, and he was talking about it, he kept saying OIS when I was in. I said, with all due respect, it's not really an OIS. He says, yeah, it is. I said, how? He says, officer involved squashing.
Wow. Wow, you went. I didn't even see totally that coming. I thought, where's he going with this? And I, wow, squashing.
Travis, you like that one?
Yeah, you got me on that one. I mean, I can't remember. I don't know if Anthony's ever been funny, but that one was getting close. That one was getting very close.
That was a good one. I like that one. He definitely got squashed, though.
So the Bearcat had wheels and tires, not tracks, correct? If I'm going back from memory, I think
it's a regular Bearcat. Yeah, it's a Ford, you know, 550, whatever, you know, F550.
And apparently, Chip, they're not racist anymore. Now it's ShotSpotter that's racist, because back during Barack Obama's days, we had to all get rid of the Bearcats because apparently they targeted certain people. But I'm glad we have them, because I mean, they came down on the federal funding for. I was doing a lot of federal grants back during the Obama days, and man, you couldn't hardly get anything that actually helped cops through the federal government during those 8 years. It had to be, you know,
right.
You could get purple hair dye and things like that, but you couldn't get actual equipment to actually help cops. So, pretty unfortunate.
Oh yeah, you could. You wouldn't believe it. And nose rings. Don't forget the nose rings. The septum rings.
You guys are too much. So. We're winding it down, and for Robin Mims and Sean Bell and all the guys over on Facebook and on YouTube, assuming that we're still live on YouTube after, you know, Anthony handled the little thing that he handled earlier, and also on Rumble. I know that's my fault. And thanks for the support, guys. We appreciate it. Thanks for watching the show. Big thank you to Attorney Anthony Bandero. Don't forget Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com and Travis Yates. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue, the woundedblue.org, but how can people get, I know you've got a lot of stuff going on, Travis. I'm going to try to find that banner real quick about what you've got going on. I think it's Focus Certified. How can people get more information in 30 seconds?
Well, my main website, just go to my name, travisyates.org. Don't go to .com. It definitely isn't me. You'll know that when you go there, but Focus Certified, kind of deals with a lot of the videos that we talk about, Chip. We're studying what's happening before violence, because if we know what's happening before violence, we can prevent violence. No one has seemed to have cared about this up until now. In fact, the latest de-escalation study out of New Jersey that came out this week showed force and injuries going up. So we're trying to fix all of that through actually doing real research on what's occurring before violence and then training cops to do it. Go to FocusCertified.com. Figure it all
out. FocusCertified.com, Gauss.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, GunLearner.com, and Medicare.live, TwoBells.com. Thanks for watching the show. We'll see you back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern.